Hey everybody, this is Spike Ferriston from Spike's Car Radio. We're out here in the porch of at the Malibu Kitchen at the Malibu Country Mart every weekend doing podcasts. My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. We're going to have Jeremy Piven. We're going to have Chris Hardwick. See you soon on Spike's Car Radio.
I think he's over-projecting for a podcast.
And I love to over-project for podcasts. Join me every week at PodcastOne.com and Apple Podcasts.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for doing what you do. Right, Drewski?
Yeah, buddy.
All right.
It was on the Stern Show. I forgot to mention
York. Tell us all about it.
It was fun. I got. I was coming out of the, going into the bathroom. You know, it's serious. They have that, those bathrooms out by that kind of waiting area.
Yeah, you go up to, I don't know, the 42nd floor or something.
Feels something,
way up there, right in the middle of Manhattan. It's a pretty impressive big lobby. Ronnie, the limo driver, comes and sort of escorts you. There's a kind of...
Really? Ronnie escorts you? I haven't had that in years.
Well, maybe it's been a while. Yeah. It's a big double. You land, and it's a big sort of sweeping stairway that goes up in a sort of double-floored entryway. And it's really pretty majestic.
Pretty
nice. And then so there's a
and your name's always up there. Yeah, welcome, Adam Carolla.
You wait there. And so what happened? Sorry.
So I go to the bathroom, which is just off where that sort of greeting desk is. And as I'm going in, Richard Christie comes out of the bathroom and goes, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And I shook
Richard
his hand.
Richard works for the Stern Show.
Yeah, anyone that watches the Stern Show knows Richard. And he's, you know, he's the guy that drinks a lot, and he's sort of a country dude that has the dad that's always, "Hey, Richard, what's
going on?" I'm jealous of his relationship with his dad.
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
For you and I was like, "Huh? What?" It's Howard, too. Howard's always, like, poking at that and trying to understand. I think he feels equally as mystified.
Well, it's so weird when it's – it is – when you hear about a dad that took the son hunting and fishing – and they go to ball games together, and that sounds like some sort of bizarre, ritualistic, Aztecian ritual. You know what I mean? Like, what? Well, then they take the virgin, and they stab her. Like, what? Oh, yeah. And then they place her lifeless corpse on a rock. What?
Then they skin her and wear the skin.
No. That's how I am about guys, dads who go fishing with their son. Dude, what? You what? You went to a Mets game?
I know. What with your
what? Oh, we go to opening season every year. Yeah, I mean, they pull me out of school if it was a school day. Or, you know, we just go. What? What is that? Such a horrible sign that this sounds. Not. It's not like. Oh, well, you had a dad that was really into the Mets. No, it was like it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, like right. Like a fantasy story.
Yeah, weird, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
from
bad,
another time,
like a
another
horrible,
culture.
Horrible, a quite a condemnation of our dads,
yes,
I would
yes,
say.
Afraid so.
But go ahead.
But my dad was a great grandfather, so I'll give him full respect for that. And we shake hands, and I go, you know, I go, Richard, I hope you don't, you know, feel. Are you, they always ask me for, you know, an assessment of you guys, and you know, you don't, please don't. Be considered terms like alcoholic, pejorative. They're just descriptive to me.
Right.
And we started chat. I said, "Let's go have a beer sometime." I don't know, alcohol is something that you want to stop right now. It's good. Whatever you want.
He wants to stop.
He doesn't want to stop.
No. He doesn't want to stop.
He's not stopping. And then fine, good on him. It's working for him. Fine. And I go back in the green room in the back, and where Ronnie is and everybody. And next thing I know, Richard's in the main studio talking to Howard about how he was just in the bathroom. He had sharted, trying to fart on Sal. And shit his pants and was just in the bathroom trying to scrape the shit out of his underwear with his bare hand. And it didn't have towel or something. He wiped his wiped his ass with his hand. And oh, by the way, as I was leaving, I shook Dr. Drew's hand.
Oh, man.
I was like, what? And
Were you really that way?
I mean, I was kind of being funny, but it was a little bit like, right. I've been up to my elbows and shit and pee and so you roll fire, you know, people vomiting on me and stuff. It doesn't bother me that much, but it's a little bit of a, what? Mm-hmm. And Gary pushed me into the main studio and we kind of had at it. And Howard, he's so good. He just the rhythm just keeps going the way he does it. And I saw a little sadness in his eyes or something, something I'm not used to seeing. And I started talking to him about my prostate cancer and how I know how that freaks him out. That's the one disease that freaks him out. Mm-hmm. So I tried to assuage him that it wasn't that big a deal. And, you know, so the operation's not that big. And he had a million questions about it.
Sure. So,
and that was that. Got out of there. It was good. Did the after show. It was fun.
Yeah, I think I heard the after show.
Yeah.
I did not hear the main show, but I remember hearing some of the after show.
Yeah.
And you will be forever enshrined.
Yeah. Oh, Robin forgave me. She felt as though that was contrition for the narcissism test. Having Richard Christie's shit handshake was sufficiently contrition.
Hold on a second. I scored off the charts in the narcissism. I scored very high.
Very high. Not as high as Robin, but you were like a 28, if I remember right.
Right. And I don't know how high
she
Robin
was. She was a 32
scored.
Or a 34 or something.
I wasn't too much off her pace.
Yeah, but like perfect is 36 or something or 38. I forget what the actual number is, but it's pretty high.
Okay. By the way, that I have about as much trust in Drew's narcissism test as the hot or not when you go to the Shakey's Pizza and you hold that handle and the thing goes up to say whether you're a Latin lover or a limp piece of spaghetti. It's the same, about the same science. I have no idea.
There's more science, but it's reasonable to question it, for
when
sure.
When I heard all the questions, yeah. I was I found it interesting, but yeah. Anyway. But the thing that I always found interesting about Robin is she's proving your point by taking so much umbrage.
Yes.
Because I scored unusually high for the thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't have, other than not thinking it was pseudoscience, I didn't really have any,
reaction.
I don't think, any issues with you.
No.
She had an issue with you, right?
Yeah. Well, her issue was Mark Young, who was the guy I did the test in the book with, and published the paper with, he issued the test to her on the air and gave her the results on the air. I didn't even do it. He did it on the air, and then we reported that in our book. And that's what she took issue with, is we should have gotten her permission to report that in the book. It didn't occur to me because it happened in public, you know?
Right.
But I
understand. Well, that's more, narcissism. Yeah. Yeah. But interesting.
That's why they think it's so funny. But it was fun to be a part of the show. And you will agree with me on this. How many times have you done Letterman, The Tonight Show, Ellen? Do you walk out in the street and have anybody ever go, hey, man, good job? But when you walk out of Stern Studio, what happens?
It's true. I will say the second only to Rachel Ray's show.
What?
I'll tell you there's one. No, it's so true. You go, you do Stern, and people come up to you and say something to you.
Immediately.
You do Letterman or back in the day. You do Letterman or The Tonight Show. Yeah. No one says it. Well, not no one says a peep. No one knows you're on it.
Right.
It's a weird thing. Now, I don't know about numbers. I don't know about demographics. I don't know how it works. But yes, I agree. The most response you'll ever elicit out of anyone is the Stern Show.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
And Rachel Ray, because I did Rachel Ray's like weird home cooking show or something once. Not her on-set show, but like one-on-one with Rachel Ray. And
I don't know what that is. I've done the daytime show a few times.
I did this years ago, years and years ago, and I was actually out of it. I did it.
Was this when she had that cable show?
I don't know. I had did it moments after, you know, I had my hernia surgery, and I was a little bit out of it. But the point is this: for some reason, after that, people would come up to me, I didn't like you on Rachel Ray. Which, I marveled because I grew up listening to comedians, and the comedians would tell the stories. You know, I did Johnny Carson.
Right.
And after Johnny Carson, he pointed at me. He waved me over to the
couch,
the couch, and I sat down. The next morning, I woke up, literally, hand to God, I would walk down the street, and phone booths would ring as I passed them, people wanting to congratulate me. Yeah. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's nothing
then
like
he's
that.
Like, smash cut to me going on The Tonight Show, and the next day, just to the hardware store, to work, to wherever, and just everyone's like, huh, what's up? like, I know comedians were exaggerating, but not that much.
No, I know.
Not certainly not the zero.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's television is not what it was. Did not have the impact it did. But the fact that Stern Show does is kind of interesting.
I agree. All right. I'll tell you what else is interesting. Blue Apron. Number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service. Less
love these guys.
Than $10 a meal. New recipes created each week and are not repeated within a year. It takes 40 minutes or less. Upcoming meals? Well, let's see. Beef teriyaki stir fry with lime rice. God, that sounds good. Baked spinach and egg flatbread with sautéed asparagus, three cheese, and baby broccoli stromboli. Mm. Delivery options to fit your needs. No weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want. Check out this week's menu and get three meals for free with free shipping. BlueApron.com/ADS. That's where you go to get the three meals for free and the free shipping. That's BlueApron.com. Make sure you do the slash in the ADS so you can capitalize on the three meals for free and the free shipping. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, let's see. Shane, interesting question. Line 5, 31, Washington. Shane?
Hey, Adam and Drew, how you guys doing?
What's going on?
What's up?
Not much. Hey, first of all, I want to say I'm a big fan of both of you guys. Really enjoy your work individually as well as the podcast together. I think it's a great collaboration, so appreciate it.
Thanks, Shane.
You guys were just talking last show about a pharmacist who spoke English, and you've actually got one now on the line. So,
all right on.
Kind of fortunate.
Well, no one from California.
Right, you
they
did say
crazy, no, crazy Asian, and then some kind of Baltic Ukrainian kind of thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
All this strong women.
Yeah, I think he was in my class.
Yeah.
But Shane, how about what I was talking about with the opiate addiction problem? I mean, people are sort of shocked that I said that physicians and the medical profession, we perpetrated it. We brought it on. Now, I'm not saying we didn't do it without a lot of influence from attorneys and patient advocacy groups and other things and government organizations. There's a lot of duplicity all over the place. But we were the prescribing entity just like we were in the 1880s.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't work kind of in the usual pharmacy realm. I work in ambulatory care and deal with it every day with patients that I see in clinics. So it's definitely a big problem, and I agree. I mean, it's we're the ones to blame for sure. And I think it kind of struck, I guess, at the right time where we weren't practicing evidence-based medicine to the extent that we're attempting to do now. And
well,
I think
but
that,
the other the,
we're
but,
influenced
but,
by a lot of other things.
Yeah, but we believe bad data. We believed it then. The data was the problem is I'm going to tell you something. Here's where I'm going to get myself in trouble, and I'm going to do it right now, which is the clinical research does not know how to assess drug addicts. Most of them are lost to follow-up. Most of them are being screened with unobserved urines. Most of them are being screened with inadequate profiles, so the patient's always trying to get around it. They believe what the patient says. They don't understand what happens a year down the line in the process of the addictive chemistry biology. And so it's all too short term. It's all inadequate data collection. And so everything about the research around addiction is problematic. Not wrong, but problematic. So I really have – that's why we got into that problem, because all the pain management doctors said there's no such thing as addiction when somebody has pain. It's just they're responding to the pain. That's what makes them crazy like that. Like, no. And it's really and people are afraid of the disease of addiction or something, or don't understand what it is when they see it. But anyway, I digress. You have a question. Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I agree. I mean, I work in geriatrics, and it definitely parallels the problem in geriatrics where we don't have a lot of data to support a lot of the outcomes that we're trying to achieve.
So that's right.
That's definitely true. So my question was, it's a little premature, I guess. My son's only 7 months old, wife and I, first kid. But, you know, we come across, like, these discussion topics with parents of kids around the same age where, you know, there's milestones, I guess, in their development. You know, maybe it's are they sleeping through the night, and our baby started sleeping through the night at 2 months, and everyone else is struggling with this at a year still, you know, and So my wife,
maybe
and I
your kid's super
kind of
lazy.
Yeah, that could
maybe
be.
It's not a positive thing. Maybe the kid's no count.
Exactly.
Maybe shiftless.
You know, neither
and
one
no
of us
count.
Really like to brag about things, and so
yeah,
we try to
doing
just,
a storefront
you know, avoid
preaching.
The topic and you know, kind of skirt around the edge of it. But at the same time, as he gets older, you know, you want him to know that you're proud of him for you know, whatever he might be achieving. So I guess that's kind of my question: is how you guys deal with that and. What your perspective is.
Tell your kids to their face what you're proud of. Don't worry about the other parents. Lots of comparisons go on, especially early. Have another kid. Be around parents with more than one kid. And this will all come out in the wash later, believe me. Once there are peer groups and schools and so many different variables and different ways in which kids achieve or don't achieve. And you're going to – this is not something that will continue, I suspect. Wouldn't you say?
I guess, or who cares, or
well, that's
I don't know.
The who cares is what I'm talking about. Eventually, you won't care. As
I don't.
Parent.
I don't get all the kid shit. I don't get the you know. Hey, my kids have taught me a lot. You know, fuck you, retard. Kids taught you a lot. You fucking retarded. My kids haven't taught me shit other than how much money they cost. This thing, it's like I like my kids. They're my kids, but I don't think they have special powers or anything. I see them as different, and they have sort of unique skill sets. Meaning they're different. They don't have skills, but they're very different. They have their strengths and weaknesses, but other than that, I'm going to just sort of let them find themselves and be who they are, and you know now. There's all this movement afoot of let them, you know, we need to, you know, there's a lot of smoke and hokum and bullshit about kids and rearing kids. But there's one thing that's starting to emerge, which I agree with because I've been screaming about it for 15 fucking years, which is step back and see what the kids do. See what they where they lean. See what their capacities are, what they do in their spare time, what they enjoy, what they're here to be, and then take it and see if you can shape it a little bit,
nurture it a little bit. Shape it a lot, though. Come on.
I don't know how much shaping it needs if that's what they want to do. I mean, if you really want to drum, you get them a drum kit. I don't know that you got to get Buddy Rich to sit down with them. You need a drum kit. You need a garage. You know, you need to facilitate, but I mean, and that is going to shape it a lot, but it's not you going out for 2 hours a day and working with them on the flam tap. It's just get them the drum kit and, you know, and don't open the door every 10 seconds and scream, shut up. I can't hear the TV.
By
the same token. And that's kind of it. But you
are going to be proud and excited about things your kids do, and it might piss off some other parents, and that's okay.
I'm not a. I go to the basketball games. I don't yell. I don't.
But you
down.
Might. I mean, you might get excited about something they're doing.
No,
he might. You don't have a pulse. Shane might get excited about something.
Yes, and that's fine. Right. And you go to a basketball game, and everyone's cheering for their
right.
kids.
Right. It's okay to be excited about stuff, but to be you know. It's so complicated, the world they enter with their peers and other parents and things. You'll see it. All the early stuff where how long they're sleeping and what they're – that stuff all goes away. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. All right. How are your kids doing?
Good. You know, my daughter's out studying writing, and my one son's going to – I think he's going to work for Happy Madison.
Madison?
Happy Madison.
Oh, he's going to work for Happy Madison.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Is doing what?
The production.
Oh, good.
Grunt.
How's Paulina's writing?
Good, yeah.
Comedy?
She's been in a what's called a nonfiction writing program at Columbia. Mm-hmm. So she's getting a graduate degree in writing. So and then she did the comedy stuff, and she's teaching comedy writing actually now.
Where at?
Columbia.
Really?
Yeah. And let's see. And Douglas is going to go to law school.
Look at you.
And it's really funny. Garagos, talk to Garagos about this, will you please?
Because
he was so excited that Douglas was almost comical. He was like, I knew you were the one. I had you picked when you were 7 years old. Like, really? He kind of figured it out recently. That's what he wanted to do.
Well, maybe that's part of Garagos' genius.
Maybe. He was very helpful, by the way, too. We thank him a lot. He's going to Garagos' alma mater.
Mm-hmm. Armo U?
Yeah.
What is that?
Armo Central.
Where did he go?
Loyola.
Oh, okay. I should know that. All right, let's see. Teresa, 41.
You know I went to medical school?
At USC.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure I'm better than Garrett Wilson in your heart.
You're pee-whipped when you have to go sit in the UCLA stands when SC plays the crosstown rival every year. That's how I remember that. I hear whoops, and then I go, ooh, USC.
How you can remember Loyola?
I won't. That's the whole thing. I need a nice pee-whip story. Teresa, 41, Arizona.
Got to pull it up.
Oh, I didn't get it.
Oh, you got it.
I did. Okay, let's try it again. Teresa?
You're there. I hear you.
Now I hear you.
Teresa?
By the way, let me just tell you, pull up, pot up, whatever. And I'm looking at Max Pata.
It's always up. I just...
Not you. Oh. Quiet.
He's just looking at you. He's not talking
looking
to you.
I'm looking at Gary. It happens here all the time. It just happened to me at some affiliate. It's kind of an interesting. So, Drew, you tell me.
Can I tell you about Smart Mouth before I tell you?
Okay.
All right, Smart Mouth. This is a dual solution oral rinse. I love this stuff. It's the only activated mouthwash clinically proven to instantly eliminate bad breath. It's a zinc-containing solution. This stuff works and prevents the bad breath from coming out for 12 hours. It's zinc, called a zinc ion technology. It binds the bacteria, forcing it to stop to produce the sulfur gas, which is what is the bad smell. Of course, nothing ruins an intimate moment as quick as bad breath. It's everything, whether it's your job or your any human interaction, whether intimate or otherwise, can go bad if you have bad breath. And you can have extreme confidence if you use these zinc ion product. Doesn't matter if you're at workout all day or drive a whatever it is, you whatever whoever you are, if your mouth smells like hell, it's going to screw up the interaction. It can sabotage relationship, can sabotage career prospects. Here's what I want you to do. Go to smartmouth.com. And you can find this product. It's a dual agent, activates immediately. You also can find it at Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS, wherever you shop. Get Smart Mouth and use it every day. You won't regret it. Okay, go ahead.
So, a funny so it's interesting with the human wiring. I'm looking at you, Max Smith. Just because I'm looking.
Don't think you're human just because he's looking.
Almost every time there's been an issue, audio issue, something's not working, the board's not working, Dawson and whomever, they announce everything's in place. Every switch is in place. Everything's in place. Every switch in place. And I'm like, the mic doesn't work. I don't know what's going on. The thing is exactly how we left it, and every switch is in place, which I'm starting to drill down on this a little bit. I always get nervous when people make the premature proclamation that nothing's been touched because you're now... We do so many of these things in our life, and it's driving me nuts. Stop saying, double check first. I searched everywhere for my keys. You make this proclamation. Now there's nowhere to look.
Right.
I get it. And then at some point.
You got to come back and go, Adam, I did your best.
9 out of 10 times, they go, oh, yeah, hold on. And they flip a toggle switch. They go, somebody shut it off. Yeah. And I go, yeah, I'm not saying you shut it off and then took a Quaalude and then fell asleep in a van and then came back. I'm saying somebody shut it, but you made this proclamation that every switch was where it was and nothing had been touched. And then after 15 minutes, you went, the potentiometer's all the way bottomed out. The mic went, I got to turn that up. Yeah. And by the way, when they say it, it's a brand new page and a brand new day. It's 25. I've checked up and down. Everything's the same. I never touched anything. Nobody's been here. And then... oops, the potentiometer's down. All right, here we go. All right, ready to start? And it's never like, whoa, I got to stop doing that. So funny thing. So it's a bad human thing to immediately just announce. It's perfect. I didn't touch a thing. Your mic must have been eaten by beavers. The cord was eaten by beavers, ravenous beavers, because it's nothing here.
But it must be a natural human thing, even though it's a bad thing.
Not for winners. It's not for winners. But it is, it's secondhand. It's second nature for losers. This immediate shove back of, it's not here.
So defensiveness is not a good way to be. It's a bottom line. Always be open to taking inventory on your own shit, no matter how many times you have to do it.
First thing is don't look at it as the mic's not hot as a personal attack on your character. Like, number one, don't weave it. Don't fucking weave it into something about that. It's like the mic's not working. That's just our communal problem right now. No one said the mic's not working, Dumbo.
Think about
the mic's not working.
Think about this. Like, if you're flying a 757, you go through checklist after checklist after checklist. And if some alert comes on your flight deck, you're not going to go, checked everything. Thing's broken.
Right.
You're going to go back and check it because there's a lot at stake. Just immediately, just, okay, let's check it again. Check it again. Check it again.
You want to talk about anxiety. So I was doing, so here's a funny pattern thing. I was doing a No Safe Spaces, Fox Financial News, what they call a hit and a remote. Dr. Drew's 200,000 of these. I've done 200,000 of them as well. You go to the remote studio and you sit down, and they're all a little bit different, but you just sit on a chair and they have that backdrop of Los Angeles behind you, and you put the earpiece in and put the mic on, and it's just a whole lot of. Every once in a while, if you ever go watch it, you'll see your shirt was sitting weird on you, and you go, what the fuck? Why wasn't the guy who was standing there the entire time? Why didn't he just? Oh, I was in the chair for 19 minutes waiting while they're talking to you. How come at some point he doesn't walk up and just tug down your shirt that's riding up on one side just
think,
a little
I think
bit?
I've officially done more of these than you. You know what you have to do? You have to ask for a camera return, and you have to check it yourself because they never do it. They never, ever, ever do it.
You go home, and you look at yourself, and you got a piece of broccoli on your tooth, and one collar's popped up, and you're like, wouldn't the guy, the makeup lady was standing there the whole time. Like, why wouldn't she stand there holding her powder puff? Like, how about we give you a little double duty here, and you just pull my sleeve down a little bit. But anyway, so they say, do you want to do this hit on this thing? Now, this doesn't make me a genius, but it sort of makes me a genius. I say two things. Matt tells me, here's where it is. It's near the Burbank Airport. And I say, okay. And my first impulse is, oh, that place. I used to do, when I'd do O'Reilly, the first 10 times I did it there, but it didn't work out a few times or something. The place was a little disorganized.
Is that the one that's kind of on a weird pointy island with a lot of satellite dishes and stuff?
Yeah, they all have a lot of satellite dishes.
No, but the Empire was called Empire.
It's weird. It's right by the airport, right by the Burbank
airport. Yeah, I think they got rid of that one.
Well,
go ahead.
It's still there. Yeah. The point is this. I remember you had so much flavor to the story.
Go ahead.
Place non-existent. Yeah. All right. My first impulse was, I remember going there some years ago when we were doing O'Reilly, but I remember O'Reilly kind of going, it's kind of amateur hour over here. And they moved me to another one, and there was never a problem off of Ventura Boulevard. Yeah. Never had a problem. So when Matt said, it's by the airport, I remember going, oh, those guys. And then I remember kind of thinking, I don't think they have their shit together over there. But then I remember thinking, oh, who cares?
I know the Ventura guys. So you're saying big, the soundstage, they used to have the Starship Enterprise in. But go ahead.
So I then go over there, and I sit down, and the guy's in my ear, and it's like, hey, we're just New York talking. Thanks for coming on the show. Come here. And for the next 13 minutes, which doesn't sound that long, but it's long when you're sitting on the chair, it's a lot of, the mic's up. Oh, the mic's potted up. We got to get Adam, test again. Adam, you're hearing the commercial in the feed. This is New York. Just talk. Can you talk? Are you talking? Yeah. Sorry. The mic's up. The guy's in the booth. So you see the arms flying around. It's on. I don't know what's on. The mic's on. It's potted up. We're not getting any audio from Adam. So back and forth. I'm hearing it, my earpiece. It's frantic. It's a comeback commercial. All right, we'll do it. Bump it. And then back to the show, and it's back again. The mic, Adam, can you hear me? This is New York. Can you hear me? Yes, I hear you. Speaking of the mic, can you hear it? We're not getting up. So, 12 minutes of that, but nonstop.
Yeah.
Just while you're sitting there. And then at a certain point, we start taking the mic off. We do take the mic off. We're now scrubbing the mission. My first thing was like, oh, yeah, I remember these guys were fuck-ups, and here we go. Of course, the guy on my side is just like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if lightning hit the tower. I don't know. This is force majeure. This act of God. This board is not – everything's perfect. The mic is on. Everything is – it's not on our end. It's not on our end. And they keep screaming back, and he keeps screaming back. And it's a wild – frantic whatever for 12 minutes, and eventually it's like, all right, mic's off, we're going home. Now, because of my horrible wiring, guess what I'm thinking?
Good,
we get to go home.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go work on my car.
Yeah,
so I take the mic off, and then at the last minute I get the guy, last second, literally I swear to you, it's just shaved 2 years off my life. Like, oh, it's working. It's working. It's working. Okay, it's working. It's right. Mic back on. Here we go. Here we go. We're going. We're going. We're going. Okay, great. I'm glad I had to live through this. By the way, 13 minutes ago, I was running to the chair when I was halfway into makeup, and they were screaming, come on, here we go. Hit, 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 hit.
Right.
All right. Hey, guess what? The guy who did the show last night, he flipped the switch off on the board. Now, the guy who's running the whole thing does the same thing all these guys do, which is like nothing ever happened. Oh, hey, I found the problem. Oh, thank you, hero. The main switch was off on the board. The guy must have shut it off last night. I don't know what the hell he was thinking. And I was thinking two things. A, let's not do as much externalizing. Mm-hmm. B, quit screaming. It's on their end. It's on their end. The second, there's an emotional part, but there's a philosophical, personal part. Stop saying it's on their end. You stop looking when you do, it's on their end.
Yeah.
And then number three, oh, yeah, you guys are fuck-ups. I forgot about you being fuck-ups. But now I'm back. It's been 2 years, and it was a total clusterfuck.
Focus back.
Back, yeah.
ZipRecruiter, speaking of focus, it's tough to find the talent you need. Think about this, what you're describing. Mm. ZipRecruiter never would refer these guys.
Never.
Yes, ZipRecruiter, post your job to 100-plus job sites with one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people for your job. Unlike other sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. It finds them. Over 80% of the jobs that are posted get a qualified candidate or get many qualified candidates in just 24 hours. 80% of jobs, think about that. 80% of the jobs posted get qualified candidates in 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls. You can actually use their dashboard at ZipRecruiter to screen, rate, and manage candidates right in one place with the ZipRecruiter dashboard. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/ADS. That is ZipRecruiter.com/ADS. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ADS.
All right, real fast. Teresa, 41, Arizona. Can't eat without having bad stomach pains and bloating. Gallbladder. Test came back normal.
Yeah.
What else, Drew?
Teresa, what testing have you had done for this?
I've had an ultrasound. I've had an EGD with stomach biopsy. I had a HIDA scan and a CT.
Wow. And have you ever had anything like this before, ever?
A couple of years ago, I had some really bad, like 3 days of like really bad burping that wouldn't stop really. And I had an EGD, and they said it was gastritis. But now I can't eat anything. I'm down 29 pounds in a month.
Oof. And can't eat anything. And
anything I eat, it hits me, yeah.
Are you taking any medication?
Well, the doctor put me on Dilexin, but that hasn't helped at all.
Excellent.
And they think it's my gallbladder, but all my tests came back normal, except for when I did the HIDA scan. When they entered the enzymes into the IV, I was in extreme pain and gas and pressure and,
So there's such a thing as gallbladder disorders when there's not stones. There's empty problems with gallbladder. But that's pretty rare. Do you have any other medical problems?
No.
Do you take any other medication?
No.
Had you been taking anything like Nexium or any of those medications?
He gave me Zantac when it first started.
Right. Is it possible, or have they ever used the term functional bowel pain?
No.
They've never thought it was functional.
What's functional?
Functional meaning it's not due to any medical or intrinsic pathology. It's just sort of the bowels are reacting.
So she needs to go see a real specialist.
She has been seeing real specialists.
Well, maybe out of Arizona. Maybe she needs to go to the Mayo Clinic.
Or go to University of Arizona or something. Yeah. And
hold on. Didn't Gary go there?
Medical center. They didn't let me in the medical center.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's world class. That's where they sent Gabby Giffords.
Oh, well, then go ahead.
Yeah.
I thought Gary'd gone there.
No.
I wasn't allowed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
But I want to ask your gastroenterologist if they're thinking at all that it could be functional in nature. Because the Dexilan and all that kind of sounds like they're thinking functionally. But you're getting good care. I mean, you can only do so much. I You know, you can functional bowel pain and functional bowel disorders can cause horrible nausea and vomiting and pain. It can be really problematic, but it has an entirely different approach than, say, things like gastritis or ulcer disease or gallbladder disease. So ask about treating functional bowel pain and see if they can help you with that.
All right. Go to AdamCarolla.com. Live shows everywhere. Caesar's Palace coming up Thursday, July 13th. We'll all be there playing Caesar. So come on out. Say hi to
that. Exciting.
AdamCarolla.com and live shows and the 24-hour war. And today it ends. So hit NoSafeSpaces.com one last time and take a look around. We're raising money for a worthy movie. Drew, what do you got?
Go to doctor.com. Please help us out there. Get all the support, the people to support the pods, and get those pods. They're good.
All right. So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew, saying mahalo.
Mistrial, an inside look at how the criminal justice system works and sometimes doesn't. Written by Mark Garagus and Pat Harris and narrated by Mike Dawson.
Another thing about the Scott Peterson case that has always puzzled us is the widespread, almost unanimous opinion that Scott was guilty before one piece of evidence was introduced. If you examine every high-profile case of the past two decades, O.J., Michael Jackson, Casey Anthony, Robert Blake, the Duke lacrosse team, Dr. Conrad Murray, you'll see that every one of the defendants had some group or constituency that argued on behalf of their innocence. But Scott Peterson didn't. When we took over the case, we soon found out that it was considered an accepted fact that he was guilty.
Mistrial. Available now at iTunes, Audible, and AdamCarolla.com.